It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in, everyone. We are, in fact, broadcasting live from the Phoenix Convention Center. We are just days away from the big game, and Carla Dawson is here next to me on set. Carla, you fired up for this week?
I'm just sad it's almost over. Well, darn, because this has been a dream.
It's been a dream.
Thank you, boss. This couldn't be better.
It is electric to be on site here at Radio Row. Lots of luminaries have been coming back and forth, and we're going to have some join us. It'll be Matt Collins soon, the outstanding wide receiver for your beloved Raiders.
Yes, I am excited. He has had a breakout year, and he's the best human, and I can't wait to talk to him about it.
I'm on this side, yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
He is,
and there he is.
He is joining us on set
the
now.
The man, the myth, the legend. Bring him in.
Mac, I should give you due warning. Carla Dawson's the biggest Raiders fan this side
I
of the
I dress for
River.
You today, my friend.
There we go.
For those who cannot see Carla, first of all, I regret that you cannot. Secondly, she is dressed in her silver and black, honoring
Princess
the
of Darkness, and we've got the man, the myth, the legend, Mac Hollins joining us. This is so exciting.
Thank
welcome
you
in.
Thank you.
Well, Mac, the Raiders had quite an extraordinary season. I mean, obviously.
Extraordinary is a great word.
Walk us through that transition. The Derek Carr incident especially.
Oh, don't get me started.
You're his wide receiver. You had a very good year, and Derek Carr has had many, many good years, but he's no longer with the Raiders. What kind of surprise is that to you?
I guess maybe the surprise isn't as big as somebody who might have been there longer, but Derek was a great dude from the moment I got there, and I really enjoyed playing with him. I really enjoy the friendship that we built. And obviously I had my best year, which is on top of it amazing, but just him as a guy is where I measure people, and he's a great dude. But unfortunately, that's the NFL. That's kind of –
it's business.
Yeah, it's a business, and, you know, a new product comes out every year, and – You gotta go with it.
Yep.
You know, Mac, I want to read you something from The Athletic, and I think this is really cool, and you would never brag on yourself because you're that kind of human. Talking about how you tripled your career high with almost 700 yards receiving and was also a standout on special teams coverage. Not to mention, and this is what I love the most, aside from your incredible talent, being a role model for younger players with his work ethic. Who does that anymore? And extra running routines at off-season workouts and training camp. I mean, this is you as a person. We see you on the field. We see you doing your things. And I hope that you are rewarded not only for the incredible season that you had and that you deserve, but for the leader and the man that you are. Because when football ends, guess what's left? So it's really impressive. And you brought a friend here for us to meet. Is this Vanessa?
This is Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa. Huh? Welcome in.
Thank you.
How did you get to be connected with this all-star? Wow.
It's the other way around.
There we go.
Gold medal around her neck.
You do come decorated.
Yes. Yeah, I'm decorated. Yeah. All right.
Well, so let's set this context. You are here to talk about Special Olympics.
Yes, indeed.
Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so they actually have the big event that's coming is the World Games in Berlin.
And you're going, right, Vanessa?
I am going,
Vanessa's been training like crazy, 2 hours a day.
2 hours.
Yeah, getting it in. So she's preparing to go. And, you know, it's really a big event. And a lot of stuff is going on, a lot of stuff with health. You know, those with intellectual disabilities die 16 to 20 years earlier than those from preventable causes. And when all these athletes go, Vanessa included, they'll get full health screenings. Which seems like obvious. Oh, they must get them all the time, but they actually don't. You know, when they're back in their home country, they don't get these things. I think people see me as a professional athlete. They're like, oh, well, he gets 30 physicals a year. It's every athlete must get screened properly, but they don't. A lot of the doctors don't know how to screen those with intellectual disabilities. But they're learning, and that's, you know, the message with Special Olympics is trying to spread that and teach more people how to do it properly. But I'm super excited. I'm going to try to go to the games. It's in the gap between training camp and OTA, so if I can get out to Berlin, I will be front row screaming Vanessa's name probably too loud.
Awesome.
And you're the Special Olympics champion ambassador.
I am.
I mean, they got a good one. Yeah. Vanessa, what do you think? He's repping it well?
He's doing a fabulous job representing us athletes and the organization itself. So we're lucky to have him on the team.
Well, and I think he's lucky, too, like he said. What's your event? What are you training for?
We are training for – we're going in the basketball.
Nice. Wonderful. You made it past the trade deadline. You're safe.
Yes, I am safe.
So, Vanessa, where are you from, and then how did you end up in participating?
I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. I was born
right here.
Right here.
You bet.
Yep. And born and raised here all my life. And I got involved when I was younger, like 7 or 8 years old. And then I took a really long break in life.
Happens.
It happens.
Sure.
And so we decided, I'm like, maybe go back. And I've done bowling. And then we were suggesting go to play softball and trying to get, because I'm a big, huge fitness machine.
Well, clearly, because you're jumping sport to sport with ease, I might say.
So it allowed me to take care of our health and our well-being and the fitness, and not just the fitness part. It's more the socializing, making new friends, and maintaining those old friends. So it's been a win-win.
Well, it sounds like Special Olympics has a pretty amazing culture surrounding it. And Mac, I want to ask you about culture, because I think culture is so important everywhere. But you look at, for example, the Jacksonville Jaguars had a toxic first year under a coach that was in over his head. They change and they're one game away from the AFC championship. Talk about the importance of culture and what you see the culture either evolving into in Las Vegas. How is that culture? Because there has been so much change. And a new regime. I mean, Derek Carr in 9 years had 7 OCs and 5 head coaches. What do you do about culture there? Talk to us about that.
I think it's definitely tough, as especially the guys that have been there a while. Like you say, Derek, all those different OCs and coaches and all this stuff. Like, how do you get comfortable or consistent? And I think, oddly enough, all that change, I think, helped the locker room players-wise, because they learned to rely on each other. Like, okay, maybe the coach will be different. Maybe somebody will be different, but we're here. At least the core guys. Obviously, some guys change, but let's mesh together and be together no matter what. So I think that's helped us be a better cultured locker room in terms of being able to fight through adversity. Was last year the best year ever? No. Did we come out short way too many times? Yeah. But you never saw us just.
You never gave up.
Yeah, you never just throw in the towel and just said, this isn't for us. And it's funny, like, all the times I go to Special Olympics events, that's what always reminds me. It's like, with all the adversity that Vanessa goes through, from the way people think that what she can do or what she can't do, the way that they're judged by the public, yet they still go out there and have so much fun. They still compete at the highest level. It always grounds me and kind of brings me back to, like, it's a game that you played as a kid. Like, you love this game for the game, not for the business. Don't get blinded by that. I'm selfish in that way of being able to go to these things.
Well, absolutely. And Vanessa, what you do, silence the doubters. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I've been told that I can't do this. But it's like, watch me. I'm going to show you how. So I'm more the confident in that if you watch me, I can do it without people being the bullies and the mean people that we have gone through,
sure.
And the obstacles that we go through each and every day is, it's just tough. But we can say, if you just give us a chance, and we go through a different roadmap, then we can get through it, but just in a different way.
And you more than get through it.
Yes.
It's impressive.
Thanks.
We're talking with Special Olympic participant Vanessa and wide receiver of the Raiders, Mac Collins. Mac, tell us, how did you get involved in Special Olympics?
Yeah, so I've been around Special Olympics since I was young. I had a friend in the neighborhood who was a Special Olympics athlete, had a teammate in college whose brother was a Special Olympics athlete. So I've been to games and events and flag football games and all that stuff for some years. And then when I got in the NFL, that relationship really blossomed with Radio Row and becoming a champion ambassador. And I've just got kind of more and more into it, where it's kind of just second nature, where it just feels like, it's not even like, you do stuff with Special Olympics. Like, I didn't realize. Like, I just kind of
that's
hanging
just
out.
That's part of what
yeah,
you
just,
are.
Yeah, it just has, right. Over the years, you get used to things, and it's great that I'm at that point. But, like, now being – I would never have thought I would go – have even a chance to go to Berlin for a World Games. Like, that wouldn't even have ever crossed my mind when I was growing up. So to be able to do that, to be able to – I was in Orlando for the U.S. Games. Like, it was so amazing to see these athletes and the way they compete. So it's been great, just kind of that relationship and how it's grown over the years.
And is the NFL involved with Special Olympics, or is this something you're doing outside the NFL?
I guess technically it's outside the NFL, but the NFL does do a lot of stuff with the Special Olympics as well. But then our runner-up for Walter Payton Man of the Year, A.J. Cole, does a bunch of stuff with Special Olympics.
Right.
So having other teammates do it, it's like, oh, this is amazing. Like, you don't see a whole bunch of guys, but when you do it, like, we all have that same kind of
– it's a connection.
Yeah, it's that kindred spirit of mm-hmm. just like – you just know why you do it, and you just enjoy being around each other and doing it with each other. And so it's been great, like, meeting all these people and seeing how big the Special Olympics community is.
Well, you are an amazing ambassador, and you're going to be a free agent this year.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost those Raiders. You had a fantastic season.
Well,
do you want to stay in Vegas?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
yeah,
you came from Miami. How did you like your time with the Dolphins?
I enjoyed it. I'm a nature boy. So, like, when I'm back home, because I have a house in Florida, I'm in the Everglades walking through swamps, catching snakes. And, like, that's stuff
well,
I
this
do.
This is where we differ.
Yeah. See, that's – but, like, Vegas is obviously completely different in that aspect.
Oh, yeah.
I saw water one time when I went to the Hoover Dam the whole time I was in Vegas.
Or the fountains at Bellagio.
Yeah, like, where I drove by the Bellagio and saw the fountains. Like, I didn't see water at all versus I go to Florida and I literally can't not see water. Like, within 50 feet, there's going to be water everywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Awesome stuff. He's Matt Collins, wide receiver with the Raiders, but a free agent, so we shall see. Vanessa, thank you for being with us.
And good luck in Berlin.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
We'll
and
be
I
right
hope you
back.
Stay in it.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. We are broadcasting live from the Phoenix Convention Center. It's Radio Row Week, and the big game, of course, just a couple of days away. As we talked yesterday, the NBA, with its trade deadline, has certainly intruded a bit on the NFL party taking place here in Phoenix. And ironically, Phoenix was at the nexus of all things of the NBA trade deadlines. The Suns picked up the great Kevin Durant. But there were other big deals that went down, and some of them after we had gone off the air. It's really intriguing to think about some of the other big headlines. But I guess I'd step back. The breadth and the significance of some of those trades was pretty sweeping right there at the deadline. I want to ask you about your Warriors. They traded James Wiseman, who they had taken number two overall. Obviously a guy who had lots of raw athletic talent, but now the Warriors have made a trade. Break down that trade for us. Are you comfortable with what happened with your Warriors?
You know what? I really am, and I've got 2 points on that, actually, is that I think that, number one, they received Gary Payton. It was a three-way trade, and they received Gary Payton the second, who was on their championship-winning roster last year and a key contributor. He is athletically a defensive maven. He can fly. He's a smaller in stature guy. He's been a journeyman in the NBA, but he found his home in Golden State. Well, because of his value in the finals and in the playoffs, he was too expensive, with Golden State having to pay Jordan Poole, having to pay Andrew Wiggins, who also had breakout seasons. Anyway, they had to let him go. And let me tell you, the Bay Area was devastated. He was beloved. And he's not a young guy. I mean, he's his late 20s, maybe early 30s, actually. Goes to Portland. And defensively, Golden State has really, really missed him. So, number one, getting GP2 back in the building is absolutely huge.
And one thing I might add, when I think about the Warriors, and I don't follow them as closely as you do, obviously, but they were very good defensively last year, and they aren't really known about being a defensive team. I mean, when they're the Splash Brothers, the three-point shooting so prolific, it's just probably been overlooked, frankly, and getting Gary Payton back in that. Yes, right. But to get GP back in the building is probably a really important piece of making a deep run.
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And there's a lot of great synchronicity between he and the team and the coaching staff. I mean, he just fit right in beautifully. So that's number one. Huge, huge pickup to be able to get him back, as far as even locker room, how the locker room feels. He's beloved. Secondly, I really want to credit the Warriors. It is not easy to basically say we miffed on a number two pick. And they did. And it's not James Wiseman not being a good athlete. It is they took him number two overall. And who would think that, you know, a dynasty, a modern-day dynasty, gets a number two pick. But obviously we know how that happened. He would never really had a good start, which is not the fault of the Warriors, nor him. It was circumstances. And he was injured from the get-go. You know, he didn't have college experience. He came in really behind the eight ball as far as, you know, his raw athleticism was huge, but able to do the pace and the physicality of the NBA when you didn't really have a college career at all was very tough. He had like a year and a half knee injury that he was out, so he never got the chance to really have a good start. And sure, the Warriors can lament, well, what if he's really good in 2 years? Well, guess what they would have to pay him? I credit the Warriors for admitting when we've got to move on, didn't make the best choice. And secondly, I think it sends a message to the league that even the Warriors can mess up with draft picks. So I hope for James Wiseman. He is an outstanding kid, very close to his family, needs a lot of nurturing to get up in to where these guys are, and I hope the Pistons do that for him. So that's my take.
Well,
you sorry you asked?
No, we shall see. I mean, the Warriors are in that hyper-competitive Western Conference now.
Man.
It's just amazing to me, and almost a tale of two cities, West and Eastern Conference, because really the Eastern Conference teams did not improve themselves much. I mean, yes, the Bucks acquired Jay Crowder, and that's a nice addition, but Crowder hasn't played much this year. He's got a lot of mileage on him. He's a rotational.
He hasn't played at all this year.
Yeah, end of rotation piece. He's just not a guy who's going to make a big mark relative to what just happened in the West. And so it looks like the West has been an arms race, and they are loaded, and the Eastern Conference was pretty quiet at the trade deadline.
And, you know, one to keep an eye on in the West is what happens with Russell Westbrook, actually, at this point, because he was sent by the Lakers to the Utah Jazz. I don't think the Jazz have any intention of putting him in a Jazz uniform at all. I think Russell and his agent are going to talk to the Jazz brass and figure out what kind of deal can be done. So I would think that we're going to see Russell Westbrook someplace else, probably never in a starting role. He was a reserve role with the Lakers and actually took that demotion very well and was productive. The issue is the toxicity that he brought into the locker room and on the court. And you look at how many teams he's been on in the past couple years. Once he left OKC, it went a year with the Rockets, a year with Washington, a year and a half with Lakers. You know, I don't know. I think this is the end of him being a cornerstone that you would build your franchise around or an important starter off the bench.
Yeah, that's really what he's been relegated to at this point. Okay, let's shift gears. We're in Phoenix. It's Radio Row. Last night was the NFL Honors evening. And, of course, the MVP award went to Patrick Mahomes. This is his second career MVP.
In 5 years.
Very impressive. Gosh. But he's an outlier to all things. Other great awards, Defensive Player of the Year, Nick Bosa. Offensive Player of the Year, Justin Jefferson. Of those three awards, the MVP and the DPOY, OPOY, what stood out to you? Do you like those picks, Nick Bosa, Justin Jefferson?
I love the picks because, to me, and I know we've talked about this before, I have never enjoyed watching the defensive side of a football game more than watching the San Francisco 49ers.
Yep.
And their field general and their star is Nick Bosa. He led the NFL with 18 and a half sacks, two more than anybody else. Did you hear that number? 18 and a half sacks.
Yeah, no, that's very impressive.
Oh, my gosh.
And now he has some other good pieces alongside him, too,
yeah,
which helps
does.
The cause. You're right. That's a holistic defense that's really good. And, in fact, it's so good. And this is a chicken or egg question, but it's so good that it's elevated Robert Saleh to be the head coach of the Jets. He was the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, and based on that success, he could go to the Jets. And then D'Amico Ryans followed Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator of the 49ers, and now he gets a head coach position with the Texans. And so the 49ers have to get a new DC, but I would think it'd be a very attractive job, and they hired Steve Wilks to come in and be their DC next year.
Wilks.
It's a good hire again. They will have three good coaches back to back to back here. And why not? I mean, those players are so good. If I were Steve Wilks, I'd be running for the opportunity to get to coach that defense.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think Steve Wilks is in an unfortunate situation because he took over for Matt Rhule at Carolina, did an unbelievable job with pretty much a mess over there. And should have been the next head coach of Carolina. That's a whole nother thing. And, you know, we go into the whole Brian Flores situation and everything. So I am happy for him that he has landed someplace, not only someplace, he's landed in a fabulous organization that knows what they're doing. And, yeah, it's really impressive. I'm excited. Now, what about the rookie of the years? Because you made a call, and if our Texans had listened to you, we would be associated with some of this.
Well, what's fascinating about the rookies of the year on the defensive side, yes, Sauce Gardner, and as you noted, I thought the Texans should have taken him for their cornerback needs as opposed to Daryl Stingley, who has had sort of an injury-prone career and certainly his rookie year. But Sauce Gardner of the Jets was outstanding. He gets the Defensive Rookie of the Year award. And then on the other side of the ball, another Jet player, Garrett Wilson, wins the Offensive Rookie of the Year. And that's a really special coupling for the Jets to have rookies of the year on both sides of the football. That's a great breakthrough for that team. What a foundation they've laid from last year's draft. Remember, at last year's draft, they had three number one picks. They actually came in with two, and then they took Gardner. They got Garrett Wilson. But the amazing thing here, Gardner at four, Garrett Wilson at number 10 overall, and then they traded back up into the first round to get Jermaine Johnson, the defensive end out of Florida State, at number 26 overall. And Jermaine's got lots of upside. He's a great athlete. And then at 36, they took Breece Hall.
Oh, cool.
Who's a standout running back. I mean, you talked about
who got injured, and they still had the season they had.
They've got great talent coming out of that draft. One of the best drafts I've seen in a long time. And remember, draft night, everybody felt that. So it's an interesting thing. It doesn't happen all the time. When the draft happens, we all think we know the immediate winners and losers. And the Jets were an immediate winner that night in Las Vegas at the draft. And it actually did play out on the field to get two Rookie of the Year awards on both sides of the ball. Just very, very, very impressive for the Jets. And hopefully that's the foundation. They're just a quarterback away.
Well, I was just going to say, no longer is the Jets where quarterbacks go to die. I mean,
yeah.
Credit that front office who has, like you alluded to, not alluded to, you said it. I mean, they have had an amazing draft. I mean, Zach Wilson.
That's the
that's
one
a
dilemma.
Bust.
Look,
that's
if Zach Wilson had been whom they thought he would be, the number two, worthy of the number two overall pick, that team would be really poised for a good run.
And what did I think about Zach Wilson?
Oh, man, you panned him. You hated the pick.
Nope, hated the pick.
You were right.
I thought, you know, you've had one senior season with BYU that was good. No, I don't do it. But you know what's interesting? Talking about Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner of the Jets, first rookie to be named an All-Pro, this is Sauce, since 1981, Ronnie Lott. How about
that? Radio Row, we will be right back. You're listening to Sports Map Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row here in Phoenix. And joining us now on set is the standout cornerback of the New York Giants, Adoree Jackson. Welcome to the show. Great to have you.
Appreciate you guys.
And former USC Trojan.
Yeah.
I failed to highlight his collegiate history, which, by the way, coincides with Carla's. Yes. So you made this progression from USC, drafted in the first round by the Titans.
Right.
You're now playing for the Giants. Describe the difference of playing for the Titans and coming into the Giants, and how was it? Has it been with the Giants?
I would say the transition from different cities, you know, going from L.A., going to Nashville, not knowing what to expect being in a big city, going to a smaller city, I would say, but having some success there, you know, going to an AFC championship, being in playoffs three of my 4 years there, and then going to New York, which is, I would say, the mecca of football, and, you know, only winning four games. So I think that was more of a shock, you know, coming from two winning programs,
yep,
going there losing, and then this year turning it all around, going to the playoffs and making it to the divisional round, which was a blessing.
So what was the difference this year? How did the Giants make such a big leap?
God just had a little favor for us.
I love that.
I would say, because the games that we lost last year came down to a two-minute, a third down, or just some miscues on situational football. Mm-hmm. This year we were winning those situations, and it helped us get to the playoffs.
Now, your head coach, Brian Daboll, just won Coach of the Year.
Yes.
So surely he's had a big hand. He
for
was
sure.
new this year, and the team really ascended to new heights. What's Brian Daboll like? How does he
command the presence of the locker room?
I think he has like an uncle type figure. You know, some people say father figure, but I would say an uncle. Very cool, hip, you know, with the lingo and the culture.
Oh,
and
wow.
Is able to, you know, relate to us in a way that we can be ourselves. And at the end of the day, that lets us gel together as a team, and it helped us win a lot of games.
Well, I definitely see a connection here, Adoree. So when you're with Tennessee, they're going to the AFC. They're winning the AFC South, going to playoff games. You go to the Giants, they have the 1 year, but then all of a sudden they're stars, and Tennessee is now in the tank. So I don't know. I'm just saying, you've got the gold. You bring sunshine.
I
love it.
That.
I love this. How's your knee? You were injured
right
in the Detroit game.
Mm-hmm.
Out quite a while for the MCL sprain.
Yes.
How are you feeling now? You're just ready to kill it?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. It was tough. You know, it's super unexpected, especially we were 7-2. I'm just thinking high waters and thinking like, oh, we're about to have this great season, which we end up having a great season. And then some miscues and adversity. You know, you seen Xavier McKinney.
Yeah.
I go down, and it was just tough. And then just being banged up, you know, around the board in different areas. And then Dave always talk about, you know, adversity is going to hit us at some point. We just don't know when. And he said that April 4th when we came into OTAs. And it hit us at that time, and it tested the storm, and we weathered it. And, you know, my knee is better. It
good.
Feels great, and, you know, ready, like you said, to attack it.
All right. That's such good news. And you know what? It's great to see. Look how great your season ended, being so banged up. So when you all come back together next year and you've got such a healthy roster and you're such a veteran on that, they need you on that secondary for sure. It's real. I mean, sky's the limit.
No, for sure. I think that's one of the great things of knowing that with the pieces that we have and with the coaches, you know, believing in us. You know, I talk about Wink all the time, and that Minnesota game, he said our best players need to step up and play the best. And, you know, he paused for a second, and then he said, that's all you guys. And, you know, when you hear that, and you see Cordell Flott, who probably had two snaps prior to making that big breakup on
that
third
was
down. Exactly. And that goes to show the confidence that he has, but and it's helpful.
Oh, this is great.
We're talking to Adoree Jackson, outstanding
for
cornerback
sure.
for the Giants. It's interesting because I guess Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley are both free agents now. There's an opportunity to sign them before or to put a tag on them. Do you envision that they will both be back? They both had good years, although, of course, the Giants did not exercise the fifth-year option on either one of them. So you envision both of them being back in the fold with the Giants?
Yeah, I want them back. I envision that the guys, you know, that offense, you know, the two-headed monsters and Saquon and DJ, it helped us, you know, thrive. I would say without those two, you know, the season wouldn't have been the way it was. You know, DJ being a silent assassin, not saying much, mm-hmm. but going out there and producing and being productive and putting his head down and going to work. And then Saquon just being himself, you know, carrying the load. And I think they played off well off each other, kind of like Jordan and Pippen back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then you got, you know, Dennis Rodman as Andrew Thomas out there doing his thing
I
and holding
that.
It down.
No one can be Dennis Rodman, can they?
So it's cool to have those guys on the team and to see the success they had. And, it, you know, individual success helped us as a team. So I'm thankful to the season that they had.
Well, you know what? It's so easy to be good when everything's going right. And you talked about adversity, and you look at Saquon Barkley, that injury history with the ACL and everything that he's had, that's now in the rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. And same with Daniel Jones, more media adversity and, you know, Giants fans adversity. Because,
right.
you know, who thought coming out of Duke, going number 6 overall, you know, the beginning didn't look so good.
Right.
But he has just quietly put his head down and motored through. And you all play such complementary football that when the defense takes care of it, it makes it easier for the offense and vice versa. So it's really impressive what you're doing in New York. I really
you.
Love it.
Thank you.
Okay, so you've got a cousin that, you know, is kind of a household name. You want to talk to us a little bit about Lamar Jackson? You got any insight about what he's going to do?
No insight. I just pray, you know, I pray. I know he's going to get what he deserves, but I pray it is you know, everything that he's wished for, and he gets his due diligence because he has been a threat and a dominant force in his league since he got in the league. Really, even before then, I think everybody knew once he got here he was going to cause problems. They just didn't know how. And to see him, you know, win the MVP and do the things that he's done in such a short time goes to show, you know, what he can do in the future for any team.
I agree. And, you know, I really admire Lamar for representing himself, mm-hmm. he and his mom. Doing
yeah.
it because, you know, at the end, of the day, you're the one. You're the athlete. It's your paycheck. It's your health. It's your contract.
Right.
And to be confident enough of, hey, I'm the league MVP.
Right.
I'm a difference maker. I want to be involved in my own negotiations. I mean, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So I think it's really impressive.
I respect it. Yeah.
I do, too.
Yeah.
It's risky, but I do respect it. I think it's really great.
Adoree Jackson joining us here on set at Radio Row. He's the cornerback for the Giants. Now, you were here to talk about Porch Pals. Tell us about Porch Pals.
So Porch Pals is basically just an insurance based on any packages that you have that's not required a signature. So that's $500 or less. You know, the story behind that was I bought my dad a pair of Jordans for Christmas.
Aww.
Literally got them on December 19th. I seen the notification that my mail was there. I say, let me go to sleep. I'll get it in the morning. By the time the morning came, my package was gone.
Mm.
Then I had to go talk to the front desk, and they said, you need to file a police report. It was just too much going on. And then coming short, creating Porch Pals, which is insurance that you can get your money back and within 72 hours, if need be, if a package is stolen. So we just launched in California and going nationwide soon. So if you want to read more about it, you know, go to porchpals.com and sign up.
I love it. We're in Houston. We could use some Porch Pals, let me tell you. We got the same thing going on there.
Well, you're not getting elite shoes. I mean, Jordan's delivered, but you've got all kinds of Tory Burch and other beautiful.
Yeah, she might got the Louboutin.
I got some spikes right now.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Adoree might like those.
The Manolos. She might got all the nice shoes. You know, I know a little bit about
the Louboutins. Who knows what's
exactly
coming?
So porchpals.com, it's a great way to ensure the package is being delivered to your home. How great.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
No, Adoree,
what a treat. It's so great to have you and cannot wait for your season next year. Watch out, League. Here you come.
Appreciate it.
Yoo-hoo.
We've had Adoree Jackson here on set with us, and Porch Pals certainly a great resource for ensuring your items when they are delivered at your doorstep. So those Giants are now part of a division that was NFC least coming in, and by the end of the season, they were the NFC beast. I mean, there's right. No mystery to me. They were so much better than everyone thought they would be.
Beast mode right here. We got it.
Well, Adoree has positioned the Giants, that team, I think, next year, presuming they can return Daniel Jones and he can continue to grow, and they can return Saquon Barkley. And when he's healthy, he is exceptional. They've got great firepower there. Darius Slay is also a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Who is going to be a free agent. So they do have some pieces they've got to work to bring back.
Well, and you know, it just shows you at Adoree's college at USC, at the Giants, coaching matters. It matters. It's a difference maker.
Well, Brian Daboll, that is a big distinction from where they were last year.
Absolutely.
So we are excited to see that. Really appreciate your coming by,
Adoree.
Thanks, Adoree. Thank you so
great
much.
To see you. Wonderful to meet you.
Take care.
Good luck to you. Can't wait to see you on Sunday.
All right, when we come back, I want to break down the Hall of Fame inductees. They have been announced, and I'm excited to really talk about the breakdown. There was a really great group that came in. I was excited about DeMarcus Ware for obvious reasons as a longstanding Cowboys fan.
And I love me some Joe Thomas.
But there's some really extraordinary names, some very, very deserving people, and I am excited to see that. Let's break that on that list. That will be up next when we return here on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back to Radio Row here in Phoenix, a couple days away from the big game, and in just a minute we'll be joined by Ed Smith, former tight end of the Atlanta Falcons. But since we don't have him yet, Carla, I want to get back to the announcement of the Hall of Fame inductees, the class of 23, and it's a really impressive group. I mean, Rondé Barber, Darrell Revis, Joe Thomas, Zach Thomas, DeMarcus Ware, and then Don Coryell, the great coach of the Chargers, Chuck Howley, the old linebacker for the Cowboys, Joe Klecko, and Ken Riley. That's a pretty good collection. Who stood out to you? Who were you really excited to see on that list?
Zach Thomas. He was in his 10th year of eligibility. and finally got into Canton.
See, I'm going to be I was a little surprised that Zach Thomas got it. And it might have been, sometimes you get a picture of somebody when you get to see them a lot. And as I've reflected on it, I didn't get to see him play that often. I always knew he was a name out there. But you, there was no mystery in your mind that Zach Thomas was worthy of the Hall of Fame inductee.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 10 years. That's a lot of patience.
That's right. No.
So I'm happy for him.
But a length of a wait does not necessarily qualify you to get in.
Well, no, that's
I've been
right.
waiting myself, and that's I'm not right. getting. But no, he's. It's. but the length of wait certainly makes it a little sweeter. I could suppose. I mean, remember when Drew Pearson finally got in? It was just
that's
wonderful.
One.
It was an emotional thing because Drew had been waiting and waiting and passed over so many times, and now he's in. I mean, some of these senior guys, it's really interesting. Don Coryell, with that Chargers team, and remember the old days with Don Coryell, and they had Dan Fouts at quarterback and Kellen Winslow at tight end. That team, Air Coryell, and the prolific nature with which they could pass the ball, they were electric to watch. Now, they never won a Super Bowl, but Don Coryell made a mark in the NFL for lots of offenses that later came along.
Yeah, no, I think he's a great pick.
And recognize he had, we always talk about these different coaching trees. Coryell had his own tree. I mean, there was Norv Turner that came out of that and Ernie Zampezi who came out of that. And so even the greatest show on turf had elements of that Chargers offense, the Rams, great offense with the Rams that they had. So I really have to give some credit to Don Coryell and want to give a shout out to him because I really enjoyed what he put out on the field with his offense. And then Chuck Howley's a fun one as an old Cowboys fan because I can remember it was probably the first Super Bowl ever watched, which was Super Bowl V. Colts got the win on a late field goal over the Cowboys. Yet Howley was so good in that game, even though he played for the losing team, he got the MVP. And that's obviously very, very rare. You just don't see
that is incredibly rare.
A player on the losing team
win the MVP. Is that the only time that's happened
in history? I think it's
the
only time it's ever happened, right? No. And that's a real credit to him and his ability. And then, of course, from the Cowboys' perspective, I love seeing DeMarcus Ware get the recognition for his great career. Sort of sad that he did not finish his career in a Cowboys uniform, but good for him that he went to the Broncos and had a great experience there with that team.
No, absolutely. I think what's interesting to note, too, and you highlighted all the great good news from last night. You know, it's still at this point, wide receivers getting enshrined in Canton, it's just always been a point of contention. Like you look, for example, at Steve Smith. Now, he's only in his second year of eligibility, but the guy was, you know, almost 15,000 yards receiving. 15,000 yards. Two-time Pro Bowl, two-time All-Pro, five-time Pro Bowler. And outside of Larry Fitzgerald, there's no receiver in Canton with more yards than Steve Smith. So, but it's tricky. And then you've got Reggie Wayne, and you've got Andre Johnson, the former Texan. I mean, like,
it's a backlog there at that wide receiver position. It's tough.
It's hard. It's very – I don't understand what the issue is with wide receivers. Can you shed any light on that? Why is it tough for them?
Well, there's been a lot of good wide receivers. And as the league has gone to more passing offenses, their statistics have blown up. And one thing that makes it, I think, hard is for older receivers – like a Drew Pearson who's now in. But
my gosh, how long did that take?
But his statistics from the era in which he played would never compare well to the statistics of a Steve Smith who played in a different era or an Andre Johnson even or somebody who's even playing today even more so. So as the game has evolved, it's made it harder for the older guys because their stats don't match. And for the newer guys, sometimes there's so many great stats for lots of great receivers, the pool of guys with qualified numbers seems to get sort of big and it gets awfully crowded.
Well, you know, it's interesting with like Andre Johnson, you know, it's hard to find a more dominant receiver than him in the 2000s. And then you look at what the Texans provided him as far as quarterbacks.
Yes. Who is throwing to him?
Like, I mean, exactly.
Matt Schaub, Derek Carr. David Carr. Yes. It just was a tough stretch for that guy.
So, you know, there's no doubt he belongs in Canton. I hope it happens sooner than later. I would say the same about Steve Smith. So there we go.
A good night for the NFL because I think they made some quality picks. I think that's a great class to take in at 23. One thing, as we think about this week, and so much has been great here in Phoenix, one of the uncomfortable stories that's come out is the problem with Michael Irvin. And
okay,
so
I'd like you to touch on that. You enlightened me here, and I'd like you to touch on that.
Well, so those who have not seen the story, Michael Irvin checked into the Renaissance Hotel a couple of nights ago, and the Renaissance is just right around the corner from where we're staying there. And Michael checked in and apparently had a conversation with a woman in the lobby. And the conversation must not have gone well, or there was some kind of exchange that was uncomfortable.
For like a minute, right?
For about a minute. Now, we're only hearing his side of the story at the moment. He checked in, said hello, a woman in the lobby, went up to his room, and that was seemingly the end of his night until this report came out that the woman is upset about his abusive behavior, and he got thrown out of the hotel. And the NFL, has removed Michael Irvin from all their coverage this week. So it's been a lousy week for Michael Irvin. Hard to defend himself at this point. I mean, things have happened so fast. He just arrived. He's now off. He's not doing anything this week in Radio Row.
This is the biggest media week in sports for the entire year, really.
Yep. And within 24 hours now, he is filing a lawsuit. It's a $100 million lawsuit he's filing that will be against the woman and against Marriott, which is the owner of the hotel, for coming in, sort of believing this woman's story and kicking him out of the hotel. So really, really awkward week. Now leads to a $100 million lawsuit. The two things that are stated in the suit from Michael's side are that he came in, he did speak to her for about a minute. He shook her hand, and then he went to his room, and there was nothing more. And then he was asked, well, what did you talk to her about? And he did say, well, I don't really remember because I'd had a few drinks. But that doesn't make him guilty of anything. But certainly people have said, oh, my gosh, if he had drinks, then who knows what he may have said. But a lot of people say a lot of things, and words really don't get you incriminated. It's more deed. And by all accounts, at least from his side and what we're hearing, there was nothing that happened that was untoward. So more to come on that. And there is a report that there's a video of the lobby scene. So that would be interesting to see if, in fact, it was just a one-minute exchange where he shook her hand and disappeared. And if that's true, I think more. I mean, if I were Michael Irvin, I'd be livid. Now, there may be another side to this story.
Did you see? So you have not seen the video.
No, the video has not been disclosed yet.
Because, you know, in this day and age, that's how Ray Rice got in trouble. Nothing would have happened if there wasn't a video.
That's right.
So I would imagine if there is a video, and if I'm the Renaissance or I'm that woman, it should get out then, if that's what it is. So, I'm with you. I'm kind of going to sit and wait for this to play out. It seems, I don't know, it could go either way, but I think the video is going to be really key.
I mean, until there's a video, it's sort of a he said, she said.
Right.
Michael Irvin's lawsuit says that there are witnesses that corroborate his claim that he was only in the lobby for a minute. He only had a brief talk to her, and they only shook hands, and then he departed. It just shows these athletes are somewhat exposed, or these big media personalities are certainly at risk. Although, we don't know her side of the story yet, so we will have to wait on that one.
And there's Andy Reid right there, walking right past you.
The great Andy Reid. You know, one of the things about Andy Reid that I love is the way he celebrates after his victory. So there,
he just gave you a little smile there. Yeah, you like that.
For those who cannot see this, there is an Andy Reid lookalike who really looks like Andy Reid.
It's crazy.
And he's walking up and down the halls of Radio Row, although no one's really paying attention to him. He's just meandering around here, and it's almost comical because if the real Andy Reid were walking here, he would be flooded with people.
He would not be alone. He would have pretty much an entourage behind him.
There would be a huge entourage. But Andy Reid, with the best celebration, what will he do after he wins the Super Bowl?
Eat a cheeseburger.
Eat a double meat cheeseburger.
We know the drill for sure. Well, you know, there's another lawsuit we woke up to this morning.
Yes.
What's going on here? Brett Favre is suing Shannon Sharpe and Pat McAfee for defamation. Like a fairly minimal amount for him, like $1.1 million. I don't know a lot of the details on that. What do you know?
I don't really have much to offer on it, other than recognizing that, yeah, he has been dragged through the mud, his name has, right or wrong. But if wrongly, yes, he deserves some.
For several things, can we just say? It's not just one issue.
He has an uncomfortable history, to
wow,
say the least.
Wow, he does. That's a great. I love those semantics, David. That's why you're you. Good
all right, we're
going
to come right back. We are live on Radio Row. You are listening to The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio.